That's fine. Thank you very much. First of all, I just like to say how happy I am as one of the co-sponsors of this evening's event that the Zohrab Center has this opportunity to work with the Knights of Vartan, and how much a pleasure it was to work with Dr. Kubikyan. And secondly, how wonderful it is to have our two guests with us today. Dr. Charney was here, I guess, over a decade ago. We had a very nice conference, and he was one of the important speakers at that conference, and before too long, it's very nice to have him back in this building in the diocese. And of course, Dr. Papazian has moved back recently to the New York area, and it's nice to have him back here too. So anyhow, I'd like to compliment in a way some of the, by compliment in both ways, compliment and compliment some of the things that have been said before. I will start where Dr. Papazian left off. I don't think necessarily that Armenians are frightened of the situation now, but I do think, I agree that we need to really think seriously about what's going on and analyze and maybe take a step back and see what are the factors both that have led to the situation and what are the differences in the different groups, different types of responses from different groups of Turks. And already we heard a lot of that from both Dr. Charney and Dr. Papazian, and I'd like to continue that conversation. I also should say, for the sake of full disclosure, that I also was invited to the same conference that the two others were. I wasn't on the same list, evidently, as Dr. Charney, so I didn't have the pleasure of discussing it with him. I have once or twice talked with Dr. Papazian, and I chose, for a variety of reasons, which I'll talk about later, not to participate. We can talk about that more later. Now, let's step back a minute, and we already talked about how 10 years ago, even, not 50 years ago on the 50th anniversary or 40 years ago, but 10 years ago, we were still going around and calling this the forgotten genocide. And indeed, it was still largely a controversial thing when you talked about the Armenian genocide, and you were entering constantly into battles, one might say, with denialist Turks or representing the official Turkish point of view, whether they were actually Turks or even Americans working in the United States. Suddenly, something seemed to have changed. Now, to date, 21 countries have, in the international community, officially acknowledged the genocide. And of these countries, this is very interesting, four passed resolutions in 2005 and four in 2004. That's a lot of activity in the last couple of years only. Why is this? 39 of 50 U.S. states also recognize the genocide, although there's obviously no federal recognition. The New York Times only officially added the Armenian genocide to the style book 2 years ago in 2004. The Boston Globe also 2003. And we talked about, and many of you saw the PBS show, which has the Armenian genocide as the title. And this is a big change. So something very big has happened. Now, what is the reason for this change? And I would argue that these changes are what are partly fueling the change in Turkish society and the Turkish state as well. There are a number of political changes that have taken place. I'm going to try to be as short as I can, so I may be skipping over things. But one is that the Soviet Union fell. Turkey lost a lot of its geopolitical significance. It was a major ally of the United States and military participant in NATO, and it no longer had the same importance for the West in that respect after 1989, 1990, despite efforts in the early 90s to change that as a regional power. Number two, the European Union. Number two, let's say the Iraq war. Turkey did not participate, did not allow the United States rights to use its bases to invade northern Iraq just a couple of years ago. This was considered a major blow to the American military and the American government. Just prior to that decision by the Turkish parliament, the United States offered a package of grants and low-interest credits amounting to as much as some $30 billion, according to some estimates. It was withdrawn, of course. And Secretary of Defense Donald Rumsfeld, last year, blamed the situation in Iraq, the instability, the insurgency that the United States is having such difficulties with even today, to Turkey's refusal to permit the opening of that second front in March 2003. Yes, relations are slightly better now, but after that had happened, right around when that had happened, things start to change. If we recall in the 1990s in the Clinton administration, that might be considered the golden period of Turkish-American relations, both economically and militarily. Suddenly now, under the Bush administration, things changed. And it started with conservative, neoconservatives who started writing and speaking out about the Armenian Genocide when they would never allow such a word to pass their lips or any sort of criticism to emerge about Turkey. These are all very major changes that have just recently taken place. Slightly on a lesser level, but somewhat important also, is the Turkish-Israeli relationship, and perhaps Dr. Charney might have more to say about that too. But Turkey and Israel, the states, have been cooperating economically and militarily for some time, beginning in perhaps 58, but certainly important in the 1990s. And in 1996, a military cooperation treaty was signed, and perhaps not consequently, the official state of Israel sometimes assisted in lobbying against Armenian genocide resolutions in Congress in the United States. Now, the relationship between Turkey and Israel was a sort of honeymoon. If it was a honeymoon in the 1990s, it soured very quickly because of Turkish popular sympathy to Palestinians. And by 2000, there were big demonstrations in Turkey, and Turkey even voted for the first time to condemn Israel in the UN. And in 2002, Ecevit, the prime minister, accused Israel of carrying out genocide against the Palestinians, and this led to real souring of relations. And this was, papered over, but of course these things aren't easily forgotten. And again, the situation continued or was exacerbated when an Islamist government took power in Turkey several years ago. And that also, of course, had an impact on American relations with Turkey, too. The trust or the working relationship between the secularists still went on because the Turkish military is still the power behind the scenes in Turkey, but there was a little bit more of uncertainty. And then with the situation in Iraq, that led to a great deal of talk. Even some accused Americans, the neoconservatives, of using the genocide as a sort of a leverage, first to try to force Turkey to accede to American demands, and second, when that didn't happen, to sort of threaten revenge in a way. So these are important factors, but even more important a factor affecting Turkish attitudes towards the genocide is the European Union factor, which was already mentioned. Turkey is negotiating to enter the European Union. That's already begun. And part of that negotiation process includes showing dedication to reform. And part of it includes issues like the Armenian genocide and opening up the borders with Armenia. And so these are all factors that are pushing the official Turkish society, the state, to grapple with this issue more publicly than it had before. Now, how do they do that? And what is the relationship of what the state does to what Turkish scholars do? Now, I should also say, so that I'm not misunderstood, I myself have participated in the workshop for Armenian-Turkish relations from the beginning in the United States from, I guess, 1999 to 2000 in the University of Chicago. And I actually participated in Turkish-Armenian academic encounters before that in the 1990s and even earlier in the 1980s. In the 1990s, they were organized in a more organized fashion with that specifically in mind as opposed to earlier events. But one has to differentiate between the different kinds of events and different kinds of sponsors and different kinds of intentions. And I think that first of all, there are the openly official state efforts at dealing with the genocide. Those aggressive efforts that Dr. Charney talked about, which incidentally were called in partly by the same Turkish journalist, Mehmet Ali Biran, who called the Armenian tsunami was coming. He warned the people, and he said that we Turks have to act quickly. It's the 90th anniversary last year, and we have to do something to stop this tsunami. And we were so passive. We didn't do anything before this. We thought it was beneath us. Now we have to act aggressively. So on the one hand, there's been in the last couple of years very aggressive kind of new actions that have been taking place in the United States, demonstrations in Washington, D.C. last year, this coming Saturday in New York. The former Turkish ambassadors, Gündüz Aktan, you met, and Ömer Lütem, traveling through the United States to try to debate or discuss the Turkish-Armenian issue. In Lyon, clashes and protests between Turks and Armenians, graffiti, lawsuits by the Association of Turkish American Associations for the first time in trying to insert material from the Turkish point of view in curricula on the Armenian genocide in Massachusetts, the British Blue Book being attacked, or actually Great Britain's parliament or Great Britain's government being asked to apologize and take back what it wrote nearly a century earlier by the Turkish Grand National Assembly. So these are, you know, pretty aggressive moves which have not really had much success, not to mention within Turkey itself. Internally, a series of lawsuits against people, prominent writers like Orhan Pamuk, as well as journalists, most of which have been dropped because of the negative publicity. So, on the one hand, you have these lawsuits against people like these people, as well as the older series of lawsuits against Rakıp Zarak, Olu, Akçam, and so forth, which periodically crop up, and the new work of a group of ultra-nationalist lawyers. So, on the other hand, there was a sort of let the historians decide approach, which has been used for perhaps 5-6 years. In other words, from my point of view, the Turkish government has been stuck in a dilemma. It has to decide what to do, how to react now. The old tactics in the 70s and 80s that it was using just have not worked. Calling this genocide of Turks by Armenians, just calling it civil war, the types of activities that took place before are not enough, and they've been writing recently in Turkish journals about how they have been losing, if this is a war, they've been losing the war. And so they have to try new tactics. And part of those tactics concern trying to establish, first depoliticize the issue and shunt it aside to historians instead of politicians. And to do that, various fora were established. One was in Vienna, the so-called Vienna Armenian Turkish Historians Platform, VAT, which failed. It was in 2004, and about a year or so fell apart. The two groups, Armenians and Turks, were supposed to publish jointly a book of documents, and that was somehow supposed to decide whether or not this was a genocide. The call to President Kochayan of Armenia to form a commission of historians. In fact, there are precedents to that earlier, 5 or 6 years earlier. President Kochayan responded that he didn't feel that was necessary, but he would welcome politicians or state-appointed delegates discussing this issue since it was a political one. And TARC, the Turkish-Armenian Reconciliation Commission, which was an abortive attempt at track two diplomacy sponsored by the U.S. State Department and government. Which had semi-official participation. Now we're entering into a separate realm of semi-official dialogue or efforts. So on the one hand, there's the official realm of what the Turkish state does, sending ambassadors or officials. Secondly, there's semi-official reconciliation efforts. And then third, there's also the sort of effort to establish ties on the basis of our culture, economic and business ties between people or between civil society. That's encouraged partly by the United States. And this is a way, I suppose, of, and it's not a bad thing necessarily, but it's a way of trying to deal with improving relations without directly dealing necessarily with the genocide. Despite all that, the official point of view is continually summarized most lately in this month, about a week or so ago, by the head of the Turkish parliamentary delegation to PACE in Europe, that three conditions are required for normalizing Turkish-Armenian relations. One is resolution of the Karabakh conflict on acceptable terms. Two is acceptance by Armenia of the borders of the Treaty of Kars in 1921, which means giving up any claims to any of the Western Armenian lands, and three, resolution of the Armenian, so-called Armenian genocide issue. And without these conditions being resolved, meaning basically accepting what the Turkish point of view on this, there couldn't be any sort of opening of relations. So things haven't changed from that point of view. On the other hand, so in other words, things are still officially not good, but on the private level, on the level of army of intellectuals, both in Turkey and out, there's a lot of change. And a lot of changes do because the changes in Turkish society that have taken place over the last 20 years have opened up a sphere of dialogue and discussion where there's slightly less fear of, you know, punishment by the state. There's still a danger of speaking up, but it's a little less. And the lead has been taken by Turkish scholars and individuals who are outside, living outside of Turkey, but gradually people in Turkey are becoming more and more involved, and this is a positive thing. And these are people that we want to work with, and we have, all of us here have worked with these people, and we encourage that greatly. The question, more, I won't go into too much more detail, arises, though, what do you do with invitations from, let's say, the first and second levels, the Turkish state and the intermediary levels? And there you have to, I think, you know, see basically what the intent of those activities are. In the case of the most recent conference, you have to go back to the last year where there was a conference in Turkey in 2005 that nearly didn't go on because of government intervention. At the last minute, because of criticism by the European Union and even Americans about the lack of freedom of speech, there was a way found, and the conference indeed took place in the fall of 2005. But at this conference, the official representatives of the Turkish point of view were not invited. And in order to make up for this, immediately a flurry of other conferences were organized. I myself got invitations from several of them, and I think several of the other speakers here had as well. And these were all efforts it's possible to show the legitimacy of the other point of view and perhaps make a case for equivalence, that there are two points of view possible. After all, if you have scholars sitting at the same table who are arguing on the one hand there is no genocide, and the other hand there is a genocide, even if they, you know, are doing it with the best at will, it can be said that, you know, there is something that's not resolved. And we just saw very recently the first aftermath of this recent Istanbul conference, where Ömer Lütem and Gündüz Aktan, the ambassadors who came to the United States, who were not allowed a platform to speak at USC, complained in the Turkish press that, well, we just invited Armenian scholars and non-Armenian scholars. We had the good grace and kindness to allow them without interruption to speak their point of views. Now, we should be given the same opportunities in fora in the United States, whether Armenian or state. And this is something actually that's been discussed in Turkish circles for a while, when the idea of aggressively responding to the Armenian tsunami was brought up on Turkish television and other places. The idea that we now have to take it, we haven't been aggressive enough, we have to bring our voice and make it heard directly in America, as well as other places where there are Armenian groups, and refute the Armenians, or at least speak up and show that our voice or our point of view is as valuable as the other. So I agree with the way Professor Charney summed it up. I think there's a value for what the participants did, and there's a value for what they didn't do, and I agree with Dr. Papaz. It's hard to say which one is better. I felt, I was also very busy, but aside from that, I felt that that I wasn't sure how well what I would have to say, how I would be allowed to speak, even though there are assurances, you never know. And on the other hand, I knew that doing this would be an evidence that there is, for the European Union, this was being done for political reasons. Istanbul University is a state university, and the way it was organized, I found out by talking with other Turks and others, is that, you know, it was organized in a way specifically only, even within Istanbul University, only allowing those Turks who agree with the Turkish official point of view to speak. Again, if there were 25 Armenians participating, maybe there would be a slightly greater point of view heard, but there were only five. And I knew that because I asked around, and I also found out who was going, and that was my decision, and I think that of a number of others. But And I also think that it's useful in a case to have the contrary point of view periodically expressed. So to sum up, I think that it's important, a lot more of these things are going to happen. I think that we need to be ready to engage and participate in these things when they are appropriate. And we also have to think about what kinds of ways we want to publicly discuss the Armenian genocide with Turks, and how we want to encourage scholars who are in Turkey or outside working on the Armenian genocide. I kind of don't fully agree with Dr. Papazian. I think on a couple of matters, I don't think we've mined the sources on the Armenian genocide. I work on this stuff myself, and I know that there's enough material for 20, 30 years. There's only one full-time one full-time academic right now in the United States, perhaps in the Western world, working on the Armenian genocide, and that's Dr. Dadrian, who is a senior scholar. And there aren't, despite the fact that there are many chairs and, not many, but some chairs and positions in the United States, there are very few Armenians who are working on this, or non-Armenians who are able to really command the languages necessary and do the study. There's a lot of material just in English, let alone in French, in Farsi, even in Spanish and in other languages, believe it or not, that has not been touched. And we need to really understand better a lot of aspects of the genocide. What we've done is we left a void where there are other people who are approaching these issues. Turkish scholars, young Turkish scholars, actually are now more numerous than Armenians working on these things. That's very good from the point of view of Turks discovering and learning about what is happening, but they don't have access to the Armenian sources, and it's important because that complements and sometimes gives a deeper picture of what's going on. So either we have to teach them Armenian, or we have to start supporting Armenian scholarship and promoting better studies of the Armenian genocide. And secondly, I feel that I agree that we shouldn't right up front say to Turks, we want Western Armenia or we want a third of Turkey back. I think that would be foolish. I think it's correct what Armenia is doing, which is stating that there's no demands, or the normalization of diplomatic relations is not connected with the genocide issue, and that should be done separately. On the other hand, I think that one of the reasons why there's been progress on the Armenian genocide, I don't think it's the major reason. I believe it's international developments that have nothing to do with what the Armenians are doing, plus some developments in terms of the importance of genocide because of its recurrence in Rwanda and Bosnia and Kosovo and then now in Darfur, and that becoming an important part of intellectual discourse in the United States and Europe. But I also think that and the Armenian persistence in keeping this issue alive over 90 years is also an important factor, and part of it is due to political action. I don't think Armenians should give up on that, and I don't see anything wrong even in discussing and debating and even demanding at least some kind of compensation. For me, compensation without anything beyond mere words doesn't carry much meaning. What it's going to be, I don't know. That's a very complex issue, and that is something that we need to have not just panels on, but we need to have serious discussions about and think about as a community to see what's realistic and what's possible. But it's certainly not a dead issue, and it just has to be handled probably because, correctly, we don't want to, on the one hand, scare off people who are just beginning to understand the dimensions of this issue. At the same time, we don't want to hide things from them, too, because this is an important part of it. This is an important part of justice, and it's an important part of the Armenian identity and Armenian history. So I'll stop there. I think I've already spoken too much. I hope you don't mind my comments, and I think we're all ready for questions, and I'm going to be the moderator also, if you don't mind. So let's have some questions. Also, I'm going to be brutal, so please try to make your questions brief and not have statements. We have a big crowd, and I think everybody wants to have a chance to say something. So,
yeah, my question is Professor Charney, about the denials that we're talking about. I remember a couple of years ago, Dr. Papazian in Times Square mentioned in his speech that if they didn't kill, massacre, or annihilate them, what happened to them? What happened to those doctors, the clergymen, the professors, the writers, and the people? What happened to them? If they deny, I caught his word, what happened to them?
Accumulate a few, or how do you want to do this?
No, let's quickly go through. I think it's easier. You will forget. Do you want to get one or two more? We can do that. You prefer that? All right, let's get two more questions, and then he'll answer. I hope we don't forget. Yes?
What disappoints Armenia?
And who is the question for?
Dr. Charlie.
Okay, that's two.
What disappoints Armenians? One is the refusal of the State of Israel to acknowledge the Armenian genocide. My question, if question, if the Republic of Armenia opens the airspaces to Israeli jet practice, do you think they'll change their position?
One more question. Yes.
For Dr. Topazian, don't you believe that the U.S. is going to have to be clear about its belief in the genocide, and also the State Department to fess up to the propaganda and trying to side with Turkey against Armenia?
Doesn't the U.S. have to come clean on its position on the Armenian genocide, including the State Department? Okay, well, one more question. Yes, sir. Mr. Mark.
Just both professors, first of all, very interesting discussion. What was your opinion of the recent documentary that was on public television on Monday night? And did you agree or disagree with the fact that of the opposition of the panel discussion that some stations either refused to air or did air?
That's a good point.
Okay. Sure.
Whoops. Oh, it doesn't go.
The deniers say that not very much happened to the Armenians who were rounded up on April 24th. That was one of the speeches in Istanbul. Bizarre. We know what happened. We know very well what happened in terms of the fates of the Armenian leadership, and we know very well what the meaning of that roundup was as a opening anthem for the major unfolding of the genocide. The question about Israel makes me sigh, not only because Jews sigh a lot, but because I have always felt terrible about and angry about the position of the State of Israel. But the good news of it, we have won in Israel on a cultural level. I hope that's entirely clear to you. The facts of the Armenian genocide are indisputably established in the consciousness and the awareness of the Israeli public. And it's a good number of years now that what we couldn't do years ago, have presentations on the Armenian genocide in the media, we do have them now on television, including the state channel, let alone many articles in newspapers and magazines. You know of the two ministers when they were ministers. Yossi Beilin was assistant foreign minister, Yossi Sarid as education minister, who did recognize the Armenian genocide. We're making great progress, and we're standing in the same bad place where realpolitik wins. Then you ask me a question about, and I appreciate your humor, so I'll laugh with you and enjoy the spirit of your question. I didn't know that Armenian airspace was not available to Israel. I do know that there is now a charter flight once a week from Tel Aviv to Yerevan. And to my great regret, it leaves on Thursday. It's a back and forth flight. And both Dennis and I are going to be at a conference in Yerevan next month. which begins on a Wednesday morning, so I have to do the same old, I'll use the Armenian word, schlep, and fly from Tel Aviv to Vienna, and wait for hours, and then fly from Vienna to Yerevan, and arrive at 4 in the morning, and be up at the conference sharp and at 9 o'clock that morning. You'll help me, Dennis, right? If you're awake.
Well, I'll help you find the way.
Your microphone.
I can't. I'm thinking of F-16 of the Israeli Air Force.
How many hours?
Let's not get into that.
Right. I.
We have two more. I'm
standing
here.
You'll allow me not to answer.
The United States and the documents.
Israel wants me to take the heat on the next two questions. I'll be brief. The documentary, I watched it. In fact, I had a pre-copy smuggled to me. I cannot reveal my sources, but of both the documentary and the discussion afterward. The documentary was perfectly good. I think it could have been technically better. I think people looked too dark when they were speaking. You could hardly see their faces. I thought the contrast between brightness and darkness was too great as they changed scenes. But fundamentally, the spirit and the activity and the information was there, and on that basis, it certainly was worthwhile. Could have been better, but it certainly was worthwhile. As far as the panel discussion goes, the non-Turks, well, I can't say that because the Tana Aksham was with Peter Balakian. Anyway, that side made sort of fools of itself, and the Armenian side, let's call it that, did very well. But the problem is, I was so disgusted and hurt inside to have someone get on American public television and say, well, the documentary was a lie from beginning to the end. And I just don't think there's a place on American television for that. I don't think that's a debate. That's propaganda. That's the big lie. That's trying to confuse people. They're not winning the debate. They're trying to influence people's thinking by saying something so outlandish that it's almost impossible to contradict it. So I dislike it. I'm glad it has not been shown in many channels. I'm going to Denver Wednesday to be on a PBS station, a panel discussion, which will include the Armenian genocide, for 1 hour in the evening, a call-in show. I hope that will be a little clearer and better. The United States coming clean, that's a problem. We talk about Israel, let's talk about the United States. We're all American citizens here, at least most of us are. We have a problem. The United States policy towards Armenian genocide has not changed. But what is the American policy towards it? Armenian genocide, which has not changed. They're hiding, they're obfuscating, they're playing games, they're trying to get rid of it, they want Turks and Armenians to settle it, they pay people to try to bring Armenians and Turks together. It's a tough question, but I think the pressure which we are putting on, and pressure is very important. I mean, I didn't want to lecture for 3 hours, but yes, political pressure is terribly important, because it's not a mere academic question. That was settled long ago. It's a political question. And so we have to have political pressure. And I think at some point, some administration in the United States, like Ronald Reagan, who said, like the Armenian Holocaust, I mean, the genocide which preceded the Holocaust, he used the word. It passed Congress in 72. I was working in Washington when it did, and another time, when was the second time it passed? But anyways, passed Congress twice, and nothing has changed. So it's a question of building up the Armenian caucus, of making ourselves known, of being politically active, et cetera, et cetera. You know the game. We're participating in it. And God willing, someday the United States will come clean. Thank you.
Yes.
Well, it's mostly due to most all of us here, I believe, are the product of the genocide in our genes. So we're carrying this forward. But don't you think the answer to the questions that everybody is discussing, academic is saying, you know, we've got to get this message to the government and so on, the bottom line is marketing. Wouldn't you say that marketing is the way to do it? And wouldn't you say also that one way to get on that map, indeed, would be to think in terms of global, rise a little higher, and you know, we're still, the world is still living in caves. It's time to get out of the caves. It's time to develop another mentality and embrace diversity, because diversity is what this world is about. And rather take a global perspective. But marketing, I think, would be a solution. Don't you think that would be the case?
Yes.
Yes, I was wondering, the panel, if it will take a watershed event, you know, to change perspective, Turkish perspective, will it be government-driven, or will it be more sort of like populist-driven? And, for instance, would the expectation of which of the two it would be different because it's Turkey as opposed to, say, a European state or the United States, for instance?
Yes?
Armenians commemorate the Armenian genocide in Times Square every year. For many years, I have suggested them to make a map of Armenia because many Americans who pass by have no idea where Armenia is. They think Albania is at it. I've also suggested to the Times Square Committee that they have information about the genocide survivors who are there, their photos, their stories, to be passed out to newspapers and passersby, even maybe somebody speaking on stage about the genocide survivors that are right there present. And I have also asked them to invite a Native American speaker to do the opening blessings because we are on Native American land and they have also gone through a genocide and we must be in solidarity with them. But after 10 years of asking this committee, they have never, ever modernized their Times Square demonstration in any way. So I'd like to ask Mr. Akram what he thinks, how this could come about.
One more question.
Recently, Ambassador Evans used the G word, and I don't think he got carried away. I think it was done on purpose. Do you think he did it on purpose to test the waters, or the American government allowed him to do it on purpose to test the waters to see what the fallout would be with the Turks?
All right, one more question. Yes.
So what is being done about the UN problem? I mean, if they're not recognizing it, I mean, what are we doing about that? That's a global institution, supposedly. And I know they've been giving Israel a very hard time. And it seems like in many of their decisions, they're giving the Armenians a hard time. So what could be done about them?
Okay, let's stop there. How do we want to
do this?
Who
knows? Who knows? You want to go first?
There's no way that I can say anything negative about global marketing, right?
Of course.
And beyond the meaning of it as a way of influencing people more effectively, which I certainly agree with, I want to remind you of what I said, that unfortunately genocide is a global issue. It's a global product. And I very much want as much as possible for every one of our peoples to combine commemoration of the genocide of our people with, as the lady said, having Native American representation, having Cambodian representation, making this a worldwide human problem. I strongly agree with having the stories of survivors. Yes, at Times Square on April 24th, it's 90-95% the histories of the Armenian genocide. But with our always teaming up with this being a problem for us as human beings. My father was an Orthodox rabbi. He was from a generation where if we mentioned the fates of other peoples, he said, get my body language. But that's not the way we human beings, Armenians, Jews, all peoples, want to go for the future. About the UN, I've got one happy piece of news. You don't know this one yet, Dennis. Dr. Juan Mendez, the Secretary General's official representative for alertness to matters of genocide, became a member of the International Association of Genocide Scholars 2 weeks ago. Now, that's the association that you and I are so happy about, in the role that it plays in documenting and standing firmly behind the history of the Armenian Genocide. That's the real face of this man as a scholar. On the other hand, he works for a company where, and I'll be damned if I ever want to be a politician, where maneuvering is part of the job. I don't justify the maneuvering. I'm disgusted at maneuvering when it becomes slimy, manipulative, anti-truth. On the other hand, I don't take those jobs, and I understand that one has to do all sorts of things in certain contexts. I welcome his membership in the association. He will certainly never, as a member of the association, temper or contradict the facts of the Armenian Genocide. It's impossible to comment on everything, but I think I'll make one more comment that takes off on the suggestion that there be representation of Native Americans. I want to tell you of something that happened in Israel this year. It's been virtually impossible at official Holocaust commemorations, certainly in Israel, certainly at Yad Vashem, to speak of the fates of other peoples. I mean, we did it in various ways. I remember once there was a group from Australia that was studying at Yad Vashem. I was invited to give one of the lectures. And we spoke about the Armenian Genocide. A member of Yad Vashem's staff almost had apoplexy in the back of the room about how can the Armenian Genocide be recognized in this hall, which is devoted to, as if it's some holy religious act to remain only for your own people. You know what happened this year? For the first time, there was a seminar devoted to the genocide of another people. It was a several-day seminar. It was devoted to the Rwandan genocide at Yad Vashem. And there we sat, the black faces of Rwandans and the white Ashkenazi faces of Jews, and we sat together for several days. The newspapers recognized the revolutionary meaning of the event that was taking place. It's an enormous event, a step forward. So yes, we fight for the memorial of the Armenian genocide, of the Holocaust, of every genocide. We fight for the memorial of the genocides of all peoples and look towards the future. And to me, that's being a good Armenian, a good Jew, a good human being.
I think Adrian brought up a very interesting question about Ambassador Evans. I'm a Sovietologist, and I'm used to reading between the lines and around the corner and upside down, etc., etc. Evans went around for several weeks saying the same thing, talking about an Armenian genocide. Now, you can do it one time, and they don't jump down on you. But if you keep doing it, they're either going to shut you up then, or they want to see the reaction. The Armenians obviously were very pleased, and I don't know of any real public reaction of the Turks or the Turkish government. It must have been private through our State Department, etc. Who knows what kind of pressure they put on the State Department and on the administration. There is a rumor that he's going to be recalled, but there's no recall yet. And of course, there's a yellow. Is there?
His term is up in June.
So it's a question whether he'll be reappointed or not. A year from June? June. He says a year from June, and I believe him. I don't know. A year from June.
They usually have
three-year appointments, right.
He's only been here for about 2 years.
Right, so it's one more year. One of the questions is, will he be reappointed? And, of course, at that point, not reappointing him is not a tremendous statement. To recall him now would be a tremendous statement. We reject him. To wait until his term is over and say, okay, we're not reappointing you, that's a lower level repudiation, because they've been changing ambassadors. The fact that he was refused the prize for speaking out is a very interesting question. Undoubtedly, the retired diplomats who gave him that award for speaking out were told to rescind it. And why that? Was the United States government afraid that the effect of judging the repercussions was going to be too heavy when the others got involved? That it was just too many diplomats, former diplomats getting involved? It's a good question. He's still serving, and to me that means a lot. And the Armenians, as you know, are totally behind me. You were in Washington with me when you saw that standing ovation. Now they're having the yellow ribbon in Armenia and Yerevan at the memorial. He's really pulling the Armenians together. I don't know if the answer is entirely, but I think they did have him do that on purpose. Often you don't know until later. I know I was in Armenia one night and I was speaking to Giray Liberidian, and he said, I'm tired of this, I'm tired of that. And I went back with my provost to the hotel and I said, something's happening here. He says, you'll know tomorrow, next week, next month, or next year. Well, the next day, Giray resigned. So we're going to know more about Evans tomorrow, next week, next month, or next year. But right now, it certainly isn't clear. It's a great mystery, but it's a very interesting question.
Yeah, I would agree. That obviously was an attempt to sort of test the waters. Why, we don't know. But no, but he was here. We heard him in New York, and then he went on to several other places in the United States over a couple of weeks' time. And it just didn't seem possible that somebody on his own, experienced diplomat, a seasoned man, not a novice, would go ahead and publicly voice opinion so directly in contradiction with previous State Department policy without some kind of instructions. And what's happening now is the puzzling part, where it just may be an attempt to mollify the Turks to a certain extent. And even if he's called back now, that would be very embarrassing, but 1 year more or less, you know, wouldn't be harming him very much. I'm sure they could post him to even better position. It's a question more for the United States officially to sort of make clear what its position is. One second, please. And then answer to the other question by Mr. Talian about the Times Square. Yeah, I think some of those are very good ideas. I'm not on the committee. If Dr. Kubikyan wants to say a word to that, he's welcome. Otherwise...
The only other items I would want to add is that if you want to do something about it, regardless of the Turkish reaction or the opening or whatever, regardless, I suggest that you get friendly with your local congressmen. We have 155 and recently 156 members in the caucus of Armenian issues in the House of Representatives. Now just imagine if we have 218, that means a majority. That means that the House appropriates money and Armenia may get more than just $70 or $80 million. That also means that if the House of Representatives passes a resolution, that could be a signal perhaps to the executive branch that they should consider acceptance of the Armenian genocide. The second point concerning the Times Square location is that we have a great many well-to-do Armenians, and we have to mobilize them so that they can in many ways get people that have public impact, because we need spokesmen and we need to influence public opinion if we want to change the position of the American government, because we're Americans. So to be active in it, Let's say System of a Down is a fantastic group to utilize. How about getting Muhammad Ali? That's a name that everybody knows. And Times Square, why not have 10,000 people at Times Square rather than 2,000 or 3,000? I mean, we're 100,000 people in this area. You want public impact? Times Square, Taj Mahal, Eiffel Tower, these are names that everybody knows about it. Regardless what is done at Times Square or not, the main thing is to have so many people there that the traffic is stopped. Now, that will get us in the news and everybody will know about the Armenian genocide. So it takes everybody's effort. And there is no magical formula except involvement, involvement, involvement. Yeah. I just would like to mention there are a couple of other events this week. Number one, tomorrow at City Hall, where the ANC is sponsoring, again, a commemoration of the genocide. And again, it's very important not to have 200-300 people there. What if 1,000 people show up? Wouldn't you think that that would get in the news? Also, tomorrow evening, Holy Martyrs is having Jason Capizzi. He is the executive director of ArmenPEC, heavily involved in this type of work in the trenches, if you will, of Capitol Hill. So ANC needs your support. ArmenPEC needs your support. Armenian Assembly needs your support. They're the ones that are active in Washington, and the bottom line is being active in Washington. Now, of course, Sunday, make it a point. Let's not have a few thousand people. Let's have so many people, the traffic gets stopped on Broadway. Just imagine, traffic gets stopped on Broadway. We would be in all the news services. Thank you for coming.
We'll take one or two more questions, and then we're going to call it a night, I think. One last round, okay?
Major Ambassador Evans, I met him at UCLA, and I asked him the question, will the American government have presence on the 90th anniversary of Dzhinagapur? And to his credit, he said yes, and he was there. For the
90th
anniversary.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Yes.
Dr. Charney, I want to teach you a word in Armenian. Okay. Kachestun. Kach. Okay? I don't mean you're related to Mayor Kach. An Armenian Kach is a brave. And you are brave for what you're doing. And although you expand it and make it universal to all the genocides, for me in particular, it comes home to the Armenian issue. And I hope that your Kachutun spreads to some of the people in our community and we don't cower down when there's an opportunity. You go and meet the enemy on his territory. I thank you very much for that. Now, what is the battle cry that we need to carry? It's three R's. Recognition, restitution, and restructuring. I think everybody knows what recognition is. Restitution comes in many forms: lands, property, cemeteries, you name it. I'll give you all the infrastructure you want. Restructuring is the restructuring, societal restructuring of Turkey so they recognize minorities. And there's a whole litany of things that go to restructuring. But I don't want to live next door to Turkey for the next millennium when these guys had knives at our throats and not recognize that we are people.
Okay. Is there a question?
That's the message to you all, to Dr. Papazian, who said, what will be the message? The message is the three R's.
Okay.
You can contest it.
Thank you. One last question. I think we're done for tonight, and then we can have some refreshments and relax. Any last? Okay, I think then we're... Thank you very much. Oh, wait. Well, you want to... Okay. I think thank you again. We have refreshments in the room next door. There are flyers on the table outside for coming events. And bring back Dr. Charney's program from Istanbul. Whoever has that, bring it up.